I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about Mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
It'll be 15 years, 5 days from now, that Ellen Greenberg was found dead in her Manayunk apartment. And after all that time, now the case taking yet another stunning turn, the feds reportedly now stepping in, not just to look at how Ellen died, but whether the system failed her altogether.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. It's not a show. It's not a podcast. It's a global phenomenon that brings you the best guests in all of true crime. I see someone in the chat is from Japan to Jakarta to Jersey. We cover the globe tonight. A personal show for me. This is about as close as it gets to my heart. This case just seems like an absolute travesty of justice. And joining us will be Josh and Sandy Greenberg, as well as private investigator Tom Brennan. They've had a little bit of a tough time logging on. I saw Josh and Sandy, and then they bounced out, and Tom Brennan is getting here now. But just to recap it for you, back in January of 2011, on the eve of a major snowstorm, and more snow is getting set to roll into Philadelphia this weekend with the weather really taking a turn for the worse. So it was like this 15 years ago. It was then that 27-year-old school teacher Ellen Greenberg was found dead in her Manayunk apartment, stabbed more than 20 times, including wounds to the back of her neck and a giant gash on her head. Despite those injuries, her death ultimately ruled self-unaliving, a decision that has been fiercely disputed ever since. At least one of those wounds said to be post-mortem, meaning she inflicted it after she was dead, which is a little tough to do for those who know things about life and death. It is tough to do that, and that changes everything. Here joining us tonight, Guy D'Andrea, a former homicide prosecutor from the great city of Philadelphia, now a victim's rights attorney. What's up, Guy? How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thank you for joining. We're trying to get Josh, and it's funny, I'm seeing Sandy and Josh and Tom Brennan, and on the screen it says device not connected. So COE and Steve, I know you're working with them. And here's Ellen's good friend, I think Allison, is that you? Yeah, you are here. Magically here. Speak to me, Allison. I don't know if I'm hearing you well.
Yes. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, perfect. And if you can flip your phone to landscape mode, that would help. Beautiful. And Allison is good friends with Ellen, so I appreciate you hopping in because I know we're having a couple of issues getting people on. But let's dive right into this. Guy, according to the major outlets, including the Philadelphia Inquirer, and shout out to Stephanie Farr, has been the reporter of record on this from the get-go, and Penn Live, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania is issuing subpoenas and document requests connected to the Ellen Greenberg case. Before we even get there, what does it mean that the feds are stepping in here. What does this mean?
Sure. So they step in, generally speaking. Obviously, I can't speak for all of the feds, but when they involve themselves in a matter, assuming, of course, they have jurisdiction to do so, which they would as it relates to a corruption case here, generally speaking, from, you know, working and knowing many feds, U.S. United States attorneys and FBI agents, they get in to do a thorough and full investigation, right? This is not a cursory review, generally speaking, or anything along those lines. And if you think about it, they don't have to get involved at all, which is generally why when they get involved, it's to do a full and thorough investigation. And the significance is, and I think I've said this to you before, Joel, the significance is that this may be the, I know I investigated it, but it was, I don't want to say unofficial, but it certainly wasn't with the full force of law enforcement on my side. This will be the full first time that a full investigation is actually going to be done in this case. This could include a full grand jury. They can convene a grand jury if they want. And the power of that is they will be able to subpoena people to testify. And that includes some of the highest officials in this state. And the officials at that point would have the option, I suppose, to go in and either plead the fifth, but the questions would be put to them. And they would have to answer questions that, quite frankly, many of them never had to answer before. And so it's a significant moment when the feds get around. This is not a legal term of art, but the feds don't play around. And so when they get involved, I mean, it generally speaking is very serious.
Yeah. Again, Guy D'Andrea was previously a homicide prosecutor in the district attorney's office in the city of Philadelphia, where it is always shady, as I like to say. Allison Stern, you're, you know, Ellen's best friend. When you heard this news, I mean, this has been such a roller coaster ride for the 15 years, and it'll be 15 years in just about 5 days. What was your reaction to hearing the news? And by the way, let me just see something real quick. Hey, Tom Brennan, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. Hit your camera icon. We can hear you well, but we can't see you. So, and hit your camera icon. But Allison, what was it like for you to receive this news?
I mean, I felt like it was the first good thing in a really long time. I last February, there was a sense of relief when there was the lawsuit and there had been a settlement. But then we had another, roadblock in October when there was the determination of suicide again, and we just felt defeated. So hearing this it came out of the blue, but it felt amazing because there was just something about knowing that the 15-year mark was about to come up, and which is a significant, point in time. And, with that being around the corner and this news, I just felt like there's something significant about this. There's something that's big about to happen.
Yeah. Josh and Sandy are working on it. Sandy, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. If not important, there goes the phone. I'm going to let you guys readjust. I'll come right back to you. And there is Tom. Tom Brennan, great to see you. We heard you.
Good to see
great.
You guys.
Yeah.
Hi, Allison.
Hey, Tom. Good to see you.
Yeah. How you doing, guy?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
The birthday boy.
is today the birthday?
No. It was last week. It was last week.
Happy birthday. You don't look birthday. A day over 27, Guy D'Andrea.
I wish that were true.
Tom Brennan, pretty big news here. Is it big news in your opinion and your reaction? Then we'll get to Josh and Sandy last but not least. Sandy, if you could turn the phone sideways, Sandy, that'd be awesome. If not, don't worry about it just because I want to see your face. But go ahead, Tom.
We had pushed for this for quite some time, in trying to get the federal government involved in a case. And like I told Sandy and Josh, from the first day that I met him in the Front Street Diner.
Office.
Yeah, my office. I said, this is not going to be resolved this week. next month, next year, the year after that, or the year after that? And she said, why? I said, well, you don't understand. I said, I worked in Philadelphia with Philadelphia Major Crimes for 8 years. I said, I was involved in the arrest of Mayor Rizzo's son-in-law. I said, what you don't understand, or what you're going to have to learn to understand, is the corruption within the city of Philadelphia. And I said, it is that thick. I said, this has gone on for so long. I said, it's just normal business. And I said, if you think for 1 minute that this case is the only case that ever happened in Philadelphia, you're wrong. I said, there are other cases. And since I got involved in this one, I've been involved, I got involved in others. Okay. So, you know, this is not a singular type of thing. Okay. So I'm just really elated that the federal government finally got involved in the corruption end of things. I'm really, really thankful.
Yeah. Really and it's thankful. Yeah, and I'm happy for you, and I'm happy for obviously the Greenbergs, happy for Allison, happy for everyone, Guy, everyone involved. Josh Greenberg, do you remember that conversation at the front diner? I think it is, but do you remember that Front Street Diner? Do you remember that conversation? And at the time, did you really think it could take all this time to get the feds or anyone for that matter to take a look at this case? I also want to make to distinguish here. This is not an investigation of the case. This is an investigation into corruption.
That's right.
Within the case. So we'll talk about that. But just back to your conversation with Tom all those years ago, did you believe him? Sometimes, you know, a guy will tell you that and you're like, yeah, whatever, but they're not going to do that with my kid. But now you believe it, I assume.
Mr. Brennan came to us as a very professional, reliable source. So whatever he said, I believed, but not quite this long.
Good. Sandy Greenberg.
I think we ended it. We ended it and signed the agreement. That should have been pretty much it. I would like to know what set the feds off.
Well, that's my question for Guy in a minute. But first, Sandy Greenberg, the mother of Ellen Greenberg. And as I was saying before, you guys are here 5 days from now. It's hard to believe it'll be 15 years. And just like 15 years ago, I think there's a snowstorm, big snowstorm expected in right. Philly, New York, New Jersey this coming weekend. Sandy, it's been so up and down. I can't imagine as you know, I'm a parent myself to much younger children. I can't, you know, there's no way for anyone to imagine what you and Josh have been through. But what is this moment like now with a reemergence of hope here?
Well, it's very, very exciting. I don't know much about the legal system and subpoenas and grand juries. I don't know what any of that stuff really means or translates into. But knowing that the fingerprint of anything in Pennsylvania is involved, and now it's at a higher level, so it's out of their domain. I would hope that people will step up and do the right thing.
Hopefully, this is the closest thing to what we asked for from the beginning. Hopefully, and I'm emphasizing that word, it's going to be an impartial investigation led by an impartial investigator. That's all we ever asked for. We never pointed fingers at anybody. We never accused anybody. That's all we've ever asked for.
The patience that Josh and Sandy have shown is remarkable. If it was my child, I would have, I think, lost my mind a long time ago and would never have sort of the decency that they've shown all along. But let's dig further into it now. So again, this federal action, it does not appear focused on, you know, another issue that was at hand, which is, you know, redeciding suicide versus homicide. Again, it's looking into what happened here. Why was there never a formal investigation for 15 years into this in what is obviously a very troubling death that doesn't seem to add up? But Guy D'Andrea, why now, and why are the feds suddenly looking at this? What triggered the feds after all this time? And before you answer that, Nicole Longo is in the chat, and I could try to pull up her comment. Maybe the COE can. Nicole is on social media constantly with a few others. Melissa G is another who comes to mind, tweeting, Instagramming, and it's her. It's not us. It's her that's grabbing people's attention, and it drives me crazy. I say this every time. We get half or a quarter or a third of the viewers doing this story, and I'll never stop doing it. I don't care if it's the only story I ever do, because to me, this is the most important story, in my opinion, that we've covered here that's not getting the attention. But it's up to you guys. Tell friends about this. Tweet. Do whatever you have to do to apply the pressure. And the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is now inserting himself into public dialogue as he's written a memoir, which I don't fully understand. Number one, don't buy the memoir, but send him some emails, send him some texts. Guy D'Andrea, why now? Why are the feds doing this?
No, it's a great question. Obviously, you're not privy to the internal conversations that are had at the U.S. Attorney's Office, but you know, you can take some educated guesses. Generally speaking, this would not be a federal case, right? I mean, they would have no jurisdiction over the killing. It does not involve interstate commerce, and it doesn't involve federal property. And so they would have never had jurisdiction over, if this was ruled a homicide from day one, they would never have jurisdiction. So, you know, I imagine they watched from a distance to some extent, and I would hope that they hope that the right thing would be done by the Commonwealth and the local agencies here. When that didn't happen, and again, just like Josh said, not a specific outcome, but justice looks like a full, thorough, and transparent, right? Transparent's a key word, investigation, with the findings of that investigation being detailed. None of that was done. And there's no real evidence that any one of these agencies did anything with this file when it was passed to them. And I hate to talk about Allen as a file, but that's how they receive it. And instead, it really felt like this file left the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. And then from that point, was like a hot potato, right? The old children's game. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but it was passed from one office to the next. And I don't know that any of them did any sort or any semblance of a real investigation. At least there's no evidence that they have. And so I think you see all that. And then, you know, who knows? Maybe the feds got a tip. Maybe they know something very significant that we don't know about corruption, right? To look at it from that angle, look, in some respects, you know, it certainly begs the question. I'm not saying there is corruption. I'm saying some of the things that happen, it certainly begs the question, but they may have gotten a tip. And, you know, it could be a combination of those things and the feds just doing the right thing, meaning putting the full force of the federal government behind a real investigation to make these people who have come out and said, look, we did an investigation and our findings are unequivocal. There's new evidence, and the new evidence proves that Ellen killed herself. Well, okay, what's that evidence, right? You can't just make a statement like that and then not show it. You know, again, and they can't hide behind it's part of the investigative materials. Well, if the case is concluded and it's not a homicide, then there's nothing more to investigate. There is no more investigation, and you're not compromising it by putting forth that quote unquote evidence. They haven't done that. And so now, finally, these people whoever those are, and I know some of them, and I know you know some of them, they may very well find themselves probably with their own lawyer at this point before, if they choose to convene a grand jury, before a grand jury. And, I don't know how far you want me to go down that, not rat hole, but.
Yeah, no, I want to hear more. And you were explaining to me off air about how they investigate. Allison only has a couple minutes because she got to take her kid, I think, to sports, which is important.
Child, please. Child, not kid. Child.
Child, sorry. Is that politically incorrect? Kid? Child, sorry.
It is politically these days, yes.
Oh, sorry, Josh. Sorry to offend you.
A man of your learning and exposure.
You're 100% right. Your child. So, Allison, again, I'm just curious. The case has Does it boggle your mind that this case has never actually been investigated after all these years? I mean, and all the things you've gone through and you've seen the parents go through.
Yeah, I mean, I think it boggles all of our minds. It boggles our minds, but yet we're also not surprised knowing how corrupt Philadelphia police are and knowing how much politics can get involved. So, while it's not surprising in that aspect, it still is boggling because it is so obvious what is clearly a homicide and how they can just pass this along from one agency to another and that somebody is walking free is baffling to me and to everybody around. And I think that, justice will come. But it's at the cost of 15 years for people to have had to fight for Sandy and Josh have had, 15 years of this is what they've spent their time doing. And they've done it with such grace, grace that is beyond what I could even imagine.
What Joel said we didn't do. We didn't do anything violent or idiotic or crazy.
No.
We followed the rules and we didn't do anything.
100%.
That was so important.
Yeah. Allison, let me show you one thing. I know your time is really short. I'm just going to cut to the chase here. Ellen Greenberg had a fiance, and after speaking with Josh and Ellen and Allison, Josh and Sandy and I do that every show. I apologize. And Allison and Guy, one of the things, and Tom, things were a little rocky with the relationship. And Josh says, he had information that Ellen was ready to even leave the relationship. Well, this is the fiance just the other day on the streets of New York. Everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. There have been reports that I have not been able to independently corroborate that his wife has left him behind and taken the kids. I don't know where that stands exactly, but this is the Daily Mail finding Sam Goldberg on the streets of New York. Before I play it, I just want to see if there's no old photo of him. Well, yeah, there is, but it's attached to something. But here is Sam Goldberg the other day. We'll get Allison's reaction before she has to leave.
Sam, do you have any comments regarding the Smokey and ex fiance's case? Just want to hear your side of the thing of the story, Sam. Anything to say?
That's him today. Much different looking than the Sam with a not the friendliest face right there. This is slowed up here. Allison, when you see that, what runs through your mind?
I mean, my first thought is that that's not the Sam that Ellen met 3 years, prior to her death. Doesn't look like him at all. The second thing is, if he's so innocent, why didn't his mouth open and say anything there? For somebody that said that, in that statement that he apparently made to, that one quote in these 15 years that was ever taken from him, where his heart, or her death left him bewildered. He doesn't seem so bewildered there,
So at this moment, I would like to take the opportunity to invite Samuel Hankin Goldberg and his family to circle back and help fill in some of the missing pieces, why his texts were so angry, why when he was talking to the 9/11 dispatcher, he said Ellen was flat on her back, but she was found seated. Why did he take so long breaking into the appointment?
Apartment.
Apartment.
Sometimes we get flubbered in our words. This is new to us. We're still rookies, believe it or not. There are other things. Why is the lock only half broken and not really broken? That no one can fit through that area. Why isn't he not sitting here helping us find Ellen's murderer? Not all the time. He has a life. I grant you that. But there are things that we just don't know that he's the only one that would know. And we'd like to get those answers, and we'd like his help.
Yeah, Allison, I just want to give you a chance to get a final word in here as we're watching this video on a loop here.
And I mean, clearly it's eating him alive, or he's eating his feelings. But in these 15 years, you know, one thing that I've done as focus on keeping her memory alive. And we have a group called Ellen's Angels that does volunteer work in her memory and her honor. And since day one, or our first event, which was a year after her her death, never once has him or his family engaged in any of the activities honoring her. So I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, it sure does. Excuse me,
Allison.
Yeah.
What does your father-in-law think of this now?
He sees what we all see.
Well, tell us who your father-in-law.
Yeah. Who's your father-in-law, Allison? Who's your father-in-law?
Bruce Stern, who had worked with Ellen.
Who's that?
Oh, the teacher. Yeah.
Who had worked with Ellen, who had, had been, helping clean off her car that day, and had talked to her just hours or maybe even just an hour before she died. Cause we still don't really know what time she actually died at. We only know what Sam says.
Mm-hmm. And a huge credit to the Daily Mail here. Cause I've been wanting to do this for a couple of years now, and they went out and did this with a cell phone on the streets of New York. And he's looking a little unhinged there. And Philadelphia coming out with Allison Stern, which I love. She's, being blunt about him maybe eating his feelings away. But Allison, I just want to give you the final word here, because I know you got to run.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that people, they know that clearly the feds mean business, and just turn yourselves in. If you know something that is going to lead to the truth here, rather than the feds come get you, just do the right thing. I say it time and time again, when I have the chance to allow Ellen's words to live on. Ellen lived by, if you do the right thing, you can put your head down on your pillow at night knowing that you did the right thing. So just come forward, give the tips. If you know something that would be important to know in this investigation, and there are people out there that have, I'm sure, some information.
Allison, thank you so much. We'll get you back on soon. Thank you, Allison.
Made statements about this case, very Byzantine ones. We have never accused anybody of Ellen's death. Nobody. We've never pointed a finger.
But we would like to know what happened.
We would like a nonpartisan investigation led by a nonpartisan investigator.
Partial.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
Now, why he thinks we have accused him or acts like that we've accused him, I don't know. But it's not our fault. You can check any record you want. We have never pointed our fingers at anybody.
And you heard it here first. Sandy Greenberg making a plea to Sam Goldberg. Sam, I know you're watching this. To Samuel Hankin Goldberg. To please help fill in some of the missing pieces. She mentioned some of them. Tom Brennan, what's it like for you to watch that video we just saw of Sam Goldberg, and how could he help? And Tom, how can he help this process?
I have spoken with Tom. This is not a good question.
I have.
Go ahead, Tom.
I have, over the years, I have viewed this creep. Okay. I know of individuals.
Tom, we can't hear anything.
I can hear.
You can hear?
Yeah, I can hear. You're good, Tom.
Okay.
Sorry.
Over the years, I have seen this individual in several different venues, okay?
You know what he's going to say. Come on.
And he just never changes, all right? But I want everybody I want everybody to remember what Josh said. Okay, we have never, ever accused anyone of this homicide, ever. What I would like to see is have the Goldberg family, including like his sister, Brittany, who was a very, very dear, very dear friend of Ellen's, and like a protector of Sam. Okay. I would like to interview Brittany. I would like somebody to tell me where Brittany was that day. Okay. So, you know, and when you take a look at these crime scenes, there's different behavior that's taking place on at the scene. And there are different things that can be interpreted regarding location, gender, things like that. Okay. So, you know, when you look through all of this, you want to keep it in your mind. Okay. You have to put together victimology. And that's everything that can possibly be learned about the victim. And who was the victim's, who were some of the people that she looked up to besides her mom and dad? She looked up to several different people, one being Sam's sister, Brittany. She wanted to be like her. She wanted to dress like her. Okay. So, you know, there are different things that, you know, and I'm sure at some point, the individuals from the federal government will get to that. Okay. Because I'm sure, you know, I'll let you people know that we did do a letter to the federal government and I signed it. Okay. Several months ago. All right. So you
wrote a letter, Josh and Sandy, I'm muting and unmuting you. So you're okay. I'll take care of you.
You know, I don't know if that did any good or not, you know, but you know, we did. And I like Guy said, you know, I mean, you have people sitting there in Philadelphia and Fort Washington and different places saying, hey, what's going on here? Why isn't something being done? You know, and then they start, you know, okay, there are other people complaining to us over time about different things that went on with this agency, different things that went on with that agency. And then they start putting things together, okay? And they're saying, hey, you know, this may not be just right. So, Tom, just to clarify,
you said you wrote a letter to the feds. Do you think that it was your letter that triggered this?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know whether it did or not. Okay?
Yeah.
I was with the FBI Behavioral Science Unit in Quantico. So I don't know. I don't know whether it did or not.
Yeah. Josh and Sandy, unfortunately, can't hear you. But Josh and Sandy, Josh was right. You pretty much can guess what Tom had to say about Sam. And it wasn't, you know, he wasn't overly aggressive, but says he needs to come forward. But he also mentioned Brittany, Sam's sister. Now, I don't think I ever even really knew about her. Sandy, tell us a little bit about Brittany. Apparently, according to Tom, Ellen wanted to be like Brittany, but Brittany, too, has backed off of helping in any way. At one point, you had, for at least for a little bit, you had a cordial relationship with Sam, and then it ended. Just explain why that all ended. What, and also, if you can tell us a little bit about Brittany.
Well, let's start with when Brittany got married years later. She hired the same florist, the same band, everything that Ellen had planned. So I think Brittany liked a lot of things about Ellen, but I didn't have the pleasure of knowing her at all. And the reason I have not spoken with Sam is because we had a regular make nice conversation. He'd call me periodically And I don't know how the words rolled off my tongue, but I would say, and you know, Sam, we know this was not a suicide. And I'm saying that prior to
everything,
the diagrams, all the experts we hired, it's like I never, ever once thought this was a suicide. And there would be the most awkward silence. And he had a perfectly scripted email that he sent to us announcing his engagement. And who knows if he wrote it himself. That's another story. But at that point, I didn't see any point in
continuing
having much to do with him. But again, I really would like to hear what happened.
We just have segments that we don't know answers that he's involved in, and he could help us a lot.
I mean, just because he's moved on with his life, we haven't. We don't have closure.
No.
No, we don't.
No, I agree with you.
Okay.
I don't think he's moved on with his life because he made some statements about how he thinks we're attacking him. So we haven't done a thing to generate that, yet he thinks that.
Yeah, well, Sam, here's your time to help after all these years. It's as simple as opening your mouth and, you know, and speaking and filling some gaps for private investigator Tom Brennan and, more importantly, Josh and Sandy Greenberg. Maybe you can do that. But Guy DeAndrea, while Sam Goldberg is pondering that, you were explaining to me how these federal investigations work. They work in concert with the FBI, with the AUSA. Explain that to us.
Sure. So generally speaking, when the FBI or the federal government is doing an investigation, especially if it's of a criminal nature, they will have a combination of an assigned or multiple assigned AUSAs, so assistant United States attorneys, who will then work with assigned FBI agents, and they will work in tandem to investigate. Now, that can lead to a whole host of things. They may decide that during their investigation, there is not enough to convene a grand jury. They may very well decide there is enough to convene a grand jury. And if they do that, grand juries, both in the federal government and state government, by their nature are secret. And so no public official, no United States attorney, no FBI agent can comment on anything that happens in the grand jury. In fact, you know, when I would participate in grand juries when I was a prosecutor, you know, to this day, if I were to comment about anything that happened in any of those grand juries, I would lose my license to practice law. I could even be prosecuted. I mean, they take it that seriously. Now, witnesses are permitted to talk about it. It's not encouraged, but they can. Why do I share all that? I share that to say that it protects the sanctity of the investigation, right, and the proceedings. And so what happens is, after a grand jury, the beauty of it is, because you have dozens of everyday people in the five, it would be the five counties if they convened a grand jury surrounding, you know, including Philadelphia. So Philadelphia, Bucks County, Chester County, Montgomery County, Delaware County would be those who make up the grand jury, and you would have dozens of them. And they will listen to evidence likely for months if they convene it, potentially longer. They're very, very long. And what happens is, it can be of an investigative nature or an indicting nature. And so a grand jury can return with an indictment or indictments, meaning after hearing all of this evidence, we are literally handing down indictments to go and indict person X, person Y, person Z, right? Or they can say, and you know, you can see all these grand jury reports published after the fact, horrible things happened here. Here are all the things that occurred. Here's the evidence we heard. And they will write what's called an investigative grand jury report. And so many people are familiar with what that looks like. You can see those. They're not secret. Right? Once it's done, there is a full report generator, and they tend to be very long. Not to make this about myself, but for example, I'm suing a Delaware County Juvenile Detention Center. A grand jury was convened. You know, when they came out, it was an investigative one, and it was a 250-some-page scathing report regarding the operation of the facility, right? The Catholic Church has many grand jury reports against them. And so if a grand, the whole point of this is, if a grand jury is convened, whether it's with an indictment or without, you will see a full report detailing the evidence, the collection of it, who did what, who said what they find, what they believed, what they didn't believe, who they found to be credible. I mean, it's a pretty expansive document. And so, you know, in terms of the justice that can be done here, which I've always said to you all, and Josh and Sandy and I have spoken about that, you know, justice is the truth. And you can't speak the truth if it's not full, thorough, and transparent. Right. Mm. And if you don't do everything you can to unturn everything that needs to be unturned, right, leave no stone unturned, right, that old saying. And so when the feds get involved, that's generally what happens. And I hope that happens here. And I know many, many of the AUSAs at that office, and they are exceptionally talented, and they care about justice as much as anyone on this screen and anyone that I know. And so I have all the full faith that if they put all of what I know they can into this, that the truth will be spoken, whatever that is, right? But there will be evidence to support that truth. And so that is what's so significant here. And you said earlier, Joel, that the point is, yeah, the feds likely are not going to, they're not making a determination regarding whether or not this was suicide or homicide. But depending on what the evidence is and how they can prove, you know, assuming, right, I'm going to make an assumption. If I make the assumption that corruption is found, if that's what they find through their investigation, well, without saying it, I think that speaks volumes as to what this is, right? If they start arresting people, if that's where this leads, and I don't know whether it will, because they were corrupt, covered something up, decided to delete something, change something, lie about something. Well, that tells you all you need to know, which means that they've known all along, if that in fact happens, that this in fact was a homicide. And even though they may not be in the position, meaning the feds, to make that change, if that's the outcome, I think that speaks for itself. And then I would love to see what the medical examiner's office says then.
I don't know what corruption is, but I look at the thing where the special medical examiner who evaluated the tissue and the spine sample went to the head ME and told him, and she was told not to write a report, and she didn't. To me, that's corruption.
Mm. I want to get into that, like who could be targets here. She's certainly one of them. And then there's a comment. Where'd it go? Right here. There's not a medical expert in this world that we would concur. She did this to herself. Right. And I would have to agree with that. And I'm no medical expert, but you just look at, I mean, I just keep going back to this gash. And by the way, we've talked about this on the show many times about how Ellen had zero threshold for pain. I mean, just absolutely no threshold for pain. By the way, Guy DeAndrea, I just saw 2020 about a case in the Commonwealth, murder. Guy murders his wife with a gun. And it was, the lawyer was Joe DeAndrea. Is he related?
No, I get that question a lot. It's so funny. I was talking to a lawyer yesterday. And they said, what's your relation to Joe DeAndrea? I said, look, I have a lot of cousins. So maybe we're second cousins or third cousins or, you know, who knows? Got a lot of cousins. But I don't know Joe DeAndrea.
Seems like a fine attorney. I was like, this guy's definitely related to Guy, but I guess not. Tom Brennan, you know, we're looking at this photo and I don't want to be insensitive, but sadly, Josh and Sandy are used to it. But Annie Kay had a question earlier on. What if the feds are looking into corruption here? But, you know, through the course of their investigation, they find something else. I don't know, another piece of evidence that actually could lead to answers in the case. What happens then, Tom Brennan?
Well, that all becomes part of the case. OK, they just rolled that over into the case into the homicide. Eventually, that's what I look to see happen over a period of, you know, this isn't going to happen overnight, you know, and it's not going to happen in a year. OK, because of the number of agencies and the number of interviews that have to be conducted, and like as Guy iterated that the grand jury and things like that. So, you know, this is all going to take time, and it's just like, okay, you take a look at that diagram, all right? when we had that done, that was done by a mechanical engineer and a computer engineer. Okay. Now, these people do this for, this company does this for traffic accidents and for criminal investigations. Okay. The wound to her scalp, that 6.5 centimeter wound.
It's your job already.
And I've said this over and over. To me, as a criminal investigative analyst, quote, profiler, that's fight or flight. Either she was trying to get away or she was fighting with someone. Okay? Which everyone has to understand, we were only given a certain time period for audio and visual, okay, from the audio and visual security cameras in the apartment. We were only given a portion of that from the Philadelphia Police Department. Where's the rest of it? They took it all. They took it all. Where's the video that the property manager made of the scene prior to the cleanup? She gave it to the police. Where is that? The police say that doesn't exist. Where is it?
Yeah. And for those who do not know,
these,
I mean,
are the type of things, okay, I'm sure that
can't hear.
If the federal government gets access to all of the security videos and all of the evidence that's supposed to come about, they can't avoid getting involved in the homicide. Okay. They can't avoid that. But, you know, that's down the road. What we're involved here is, why over time did all of this take place? You have individuals at the beginning that would not allow me to talk to Dr. Osborne, who did the autopsy. Why did Dr. Galino say, no, you can't talk to him? Okay. Why? Okay. After a period of time, did Dr. Galino relent after I got a report from Dr. Ross and gave it to Dr. Galino? Why did Dr. Galino relent and say, okay, you can have a conference call with him? Why did he say I could, you know, do a face-to-face with him? Okay. Why, when we talked into Dr. Galino, years later, talking to Josh and Sandy, why did he say I couldn't sit down with him? Okay. Why, when Sandy
Josh and I'm sorry, Tom, Josh and Sandy, try to hop out and come back in, because I know you can't hear, and it sometimes it's just a glitch.
One thing that Tom said, I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah, just bounce out and come back in.
Out of where?
Out of the
hit exit all the way out and then come back in.
Okay.
Eliana will help you, my wife. Go ahead, Tom.
Why when Sandy and Josh were granted permission to take a look at the police reports, why did they say Tom Brennan can't come? Okay. When they were given permission to look at the police reports, the sergeant, they asked, they said, well, could Tom Brennan come with us? And the sergeant said, well, I'll have to talk to the people down the hall. And an hour later, he called him. He said, no, Tom Brennan can't come. Why? Why couldn't I see the reports?
Tom used to work for the Pennsylvania State Police as a law enforcement officer. He helped head up the cold case. I think he started the cold case unit there, Tom. Did they give you a reason, or they just said you can't go?
No, they just said I couldn't go. Why? Why is that?
That's a great question. We don't have the answer to that. And,
you know, so these things over time, they indicate what don't you want? What could Sandy and Josh, what could they do with four boxes or five boxes of reports in an hour or two? What could they do with that? Nothing. Nothing. And, you know, they were just going through some motions to placate them at the time. You know, the Attorney General's office did the same thing with me. And the last thing I asked Jennifer Selber, okay, the last thing Jennifer Selber said to me was, and she was in charge of the criminal investigation unit for the Attorney General's office. Last thing she said to me was, I'm not trying to protect the Philadelphia Police Department.
Right. I said,
imagine that coming from you. Mm. That's a woman who, if you take a look at her, she's got relationships with the Philadelphia FOP. I think those relationships have donated like $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 a year to the FOP, Philadelphia FOP. Why? You know, so there's a lot of things that have gone on here that in my investigation that, you know, didn't come out. And it's simply because of the corruption end of things. Okay. But bet your life, if I'm interviewed by federal agents, I am not going to lie. I'm not going to lie to a federal agent. Okay. I'm going to give them everything that I have had. Okay. From day one involving this investigation.
Hmm. I don't have to go to the gym because I'm sweating to death watching Josh and Sandy unable to hear Tom and just lost about 1,000 calories. But it sounds now, Josh and Sandy, like you can hear them. And Sandy, if I'm right about that, and you can hear me, I think you were quoted as saying that this is your last best hope for justice in this case. Do you really believe that, Sandy, that this is it? It's make or break here.
I am just determined, not giving up, and ecstatic that they are paying attention to it. And I'm just baffled with all the incest involved in the police office and the Attorney General's office and the District Attorney's office and the governor. They would never let a child of theirs be mishandled like they have our daughter.
At a recent news conference by Josh Shapiro, he said they had new evidence. We haven't seen any evidence.
He hasn't ever produced anything in all the years things that I've written to him for and everyone else. We're just ignored and dismissed, and they think we're a bunch of farmers from Pennsylvania.
He took 4.5 years of my life.
Yeah. And four and a half years, we were paying legal fees, which cost us a lot of money.
Yeah. But at that news conference, he said they had new evidence. They never produced.
He hasn't produced anything.
No, they never have.
For those who haven't heard this, Josh and Sandy go to the same synagogue as the governor out in Western Pennsylvania, and he just ran from them, ignored them at a place of worship when Josh and Sandy had questions for him, which is about as low as you can go. And now he's got a memoir out.
He had his guards come to me and ask me not to go near them there anymore. Mm. My own house of worship.
Public servant that wants to remain private. You heard they didn't want Tom there because someone said they didn't want him to know the truth, or he would know the difference between what is true and what is not true. Sarah Adams here. I think it's terribly sad how many people failed to do the right thing. Dignity, humanity. Speaking of that, Guy DeAndrea. So according to the Philadelphia Inquirer here, this is who could be subpoenaed and targeted in this investigation. It includes the Philadelphia Police Department, the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office, the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office, the Philadelphia Law Department, Pennsylvania Attorney General's Office. And for those who don't know, Governor Josh Shapiro was Attorney General of Pennsylvania, I think 2017 to 2023. Guy DeAndrea, of these, which are you curious about? And which are, I guess, which is the most important? You heard Sandy talking about the medical examiner needs to be looked at, but who else?
Yeah. So the corruption angle, you know, really needs to start with day one, and maybe nothing corrupt happened day one. And when I mean day one, I mean when the police get there. And again, I don't impugn the entire Philadelphia Police Department. Some of, and I, this isn't a, you know, covering or CYA. Some of my dearest friends are Philadelphia police officers who are some of the finest people that I know. So this is not an, you know, me impugning the entire office or department. But when you have an assigned detective arrive on scene and indicate that from his perspective, spending nominal time on the scene, that this is a suicide without even having literally a single appreciation of how many times Ellen had been stabbed. He did not know that Ellen was stabbed in the back until days later.
Right.
So how do you say this is a suicide when you, as the investigator, don't even have the facts? So, you know, I'm not saying it was corrupt and I'm not saying it wasn't corrupt. What I'm saying is from day one, you know, that detective needs to be in a hot seat and say either you had a real bad day, pal, and you just made a million mistakes, or you need to explain why you pushed this to be a suicide within minutes of arriving on the scene. Because, you know, the scene doesn't say suicide, doesn't say homicide, but here's what it doesn't do. The scene that I saw doesn't scream suicide. It says homicide, and disprove that, right? That's what the scene says. The scene show, it feels like a homicide, and maybe it wasn't. But what it certainly doesn't look like is an unequivocal suicide. And when you don't even know how many stab wounds, you got to get to the bottom of that. Then, you know, don't go too much further out into the timeline. It's what actually happened inside of the room when the detective and medical examiners and other people were in a room where the medical examiner's office, the doctors were convinced by detectives, a detective, to change this from a homicide to suicide. How was that done? What was decided in that room, and why was it decided? Because the singular fact that I was told is that the medical examiners, until I proved them wrong when I got involved in 2015, the singular fact that they relied upon was that the door was a deadbolt door that was a steel deadbolt into a steel frame. And then, of course, when I get the photos and I say, well, not only is that not the case, these are your photos. These weren't even the police department's photos. These are the medical examiner's. So wait a second. You're saying you relied on a detective who told you this was an old-fashioned deadbolt that bolted into a steel frame door. Your office had the photos to disprove that. So the questions are like, what did you say back to the detective? What did you say to anyone who said that? Did you show them the photos? Did you say, well, that can't be because here's the truth, right? These are just things that, you know, you have to know. And it goes on and on and on. And then, you know, at some point, I imagine the feds are really interested because, you know, coincidences and incompetency and mistakes, you know, as they pile up, it starts to be really difficult and hard to believe that all these people, very bright, many of them, all just made colossal mistake after colossal mistake after colossal mistake, right? It just, it belies logic. And so I can completely understand why someone would want to investigate this as corruption, because there's so many things that make absolutely zero sense. Sorry, Sandy, I see your hand up.
That's okay. And I didn't want to interrupt you, Guy. But I'd like to add that when 911 was finally called, the EMT went upstairs, came downstairs, and he says to Phil Hanton, "You have a homicide up there." And no one seems to give that man, and Brian Enten did interview that man, and he's out there in Philadelphia. Sandy, was that totally ignored?
He's the concierge of the building.
As I said before,
this guy who was there.
As I said
before,
the EMTs were never interviewed by the police. Okay? Philadelphia, you know, when I interviewed the EMT, who was the first individual through the door, he told me, "Tom, you're the first person that ever talked to me about this." He said, "I told my lieutenant, hey, we got to go back to the station because homicide's going to want to talk to us." He said homicide never came to us and talked.
Yeah.
And there are many things like
you know,
that.
As I said, you know, it's one thing after another, after another. Mm-hmm. You know.
On that note, since everyone's talking about the 911 call, I'm going to play it. I'm only going to play it once because it riles me up. But listen to this and listen to Sam, and I think it speaks for itself.
Now, I just walked to my apartment. Shout out to Gavin. There's a floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come help. 4601 Flat Rock Road.
Is it the house or apartment?
Oh, no. Apartment. It's an apartment.
What apartment number?
Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's.
No. So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. She, okay. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. She didn't, there's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie.
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't
Ellie.
See where blood's coming from?
I think she hit her head. But it's up everywhere. Okay, it's everywhere.
She might have fallen. Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
Philadelphia
Fire Department 842. What's the address? No,
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please hurry.
4601 Flat Rock.
Yes.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now, just on the floor, with blood. She's not responding.
Okay. Is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down, and I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I really don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back.
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her
flat. Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get
there? I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off. Okay. Kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Ellie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir.
Okay, I'm trying not. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
my God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell in a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down here now. I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't. If the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is someone coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, sir, what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area did it?
It's in her chest.
I can't listen to it anymore. Tom Brennan, explain this call a little bit. First of all, he calls the cousin of James Schwartzman first. Secondly, he's told to do CPR. I have to, right, is his response. He discovers a 10-inch knife. She's on her back that's sticking out of her chest, and he discovers it 2 minutes and change into a call. How is that possible? And then he gives a reason that she fell on it. Tom, when you listen to this for the 10,000th time, what goes through your mind?
God.
As Guy pointed out to me, he said, Tom, he said, I know you've listened to hundreds, thousands. He said, so have I. He said, you're going to listen to the most out of the, it was just out of the world 911 call you've ever heard. And that's the way I look at it. It's just unreal. And then you take a look at other witness statements, okay? With individuals who see Sam in the hall, and they say, I had my door open a little bit, and I could hear what Sam is saying. And Sam said this. and you look at the 911 call, and those are the exact words that Sam is giving to the 911 operator. So he's not even in the apartment. He's out in the hall. Why isn't he in the apartment? Okay. So there are things like that. And this 911 call, it's so obvious to me that he has been coached. Okay. But he's not a very, very good actor. Okay. Okay. He's not going to get any Emmys or Globes or Oscars or anything like that. But, you know, and then you see other like letters from Schwartzman's attorney saying, well, when he was on the phone with Sam, he and you know, Schwartzman and his son were advising Sam on what to do. What kind of advice were they giving Sam?
Tom, okay. Someone asked, because they're new to this case, and they asked the question, does Sam come from a connected family? How do you answer that, Tom?
You know, you take a look at Sam's family, the Goldbergs, okay? And then you take a look at a case over in Delaware. Okay, this guy was the director of the funding for the Vietnam Memorial. He's seen on film over time in Delaware. Okay. Completely disoriented. Next thing you know, his body was transported by a trash truck owned by Richard Goldberg to a landfill in Delaware and dumped. That case is still open in Delaware, okay?
Never heard this. What about the Schwartzmans?
Okay. Okay, you look at Schwartzman. This guy is a judge. And he is supposedly disciplining attorneys for doing things that they shouldn't. And this is a guy that goes into the apartment, removes electronics devices, okay, and pays and gets the family to pay to have it cleaned up. Come on, give me a break, Judge. You knew you shouldn't do that. Why did you do it? So, you know, these are things that these people, I believe, okay, are going to have to, they're going to have to answer for it, okay? So, you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm elated. I know there's a lot of people out there that are very, very uncomfortable, which pleases me to no end, okay? Because it's about damn time. Okay. Like, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to this whole case was me meeting Guy DeAndrea, because that was the first time that I got someone to actually validate what I had seen.
And Guy found the file in a closet, basically tucked away. But Sandy, you had your hand up.
I do. I want to ask your audience, and I want to ask four members of this panel, other than myself, do public servants deserve to collect pensions for corruption?
Great question. Guy DeAndrea, why don't you take that? The implication here is maybe pensions should be pulled. Also, before you answer that, I just want to point out, Marlon Osborne is the original medical examiner on this case. And on the eve of what was going to be a civil trial last February, he came out publicly and said, you know what? This is anything but a suicide, anything but. And if you remember that comment earlier, that no medical person would ever say that this is a suicide. Well, the original medical examiner said it is not the suicide.
He's the one that did the wet finger exam also. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody looking at files and stuff.
No. Like, yeah. A good, great point. He was actually in there doing the exam. But Guy D'Andrea, what about something like threatening a pension? Can you do that?
Well, so if the investigation by the federal government determines that there's a significant or sufficient, I should say, amount of evidence to charge any one or multiple people with corruption or whatever charges that would be applicable, certainly if convicted, they would likely lose their pension for sure. Now, sometimes I've seen when they are making bargaining arrangements, if you will, if there was an arrest, to plead to something or plead to some sentence, sometimes pensions can remain in place, and it's through a negotiation standpoint. But generally speaking, Sandy is correct, I think, in the at least sentiment that if you committed corruption or any form of criminal act within the official capacity of your duties as a pension gaining employee or person, as the law shows, you should lose that if you are convicted of that crime, for sure, or plead guilty to that crime.
So does that happen?
Oh, it certainly does. It certainly does. I mean, I've seen circumstances where pensions remain in place when they shouldn't. I don't remember if it's confidential or not, so I can't say it. There is an incredibly high profile case that I was involved with an individual who is essentially serving the rest of his life in jail, who should never have his pension, but he is keeping it. Now, he will never see the benefits of it because he's in jail for the rest of his life, but his family members will.
Joe Pedraza, who is the attorney for the Greenbergs, came out to the Philadelphia Inquirer and said, if that is in fact correct and accurate about the feds getting involved, which it appears that they are, that the federal government is going to investigate, this is exactly what we've wanted all along. He went on to say, it's unfortunate it has taken more than 7 years, I guess, from when he got involved to get to this point. But we are grateful and thankful to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Again, this has been going on for 15 years. And Sandy is quoted as, again, and I asked about this earlier, the last best hope for justice. Tom Brennan, do you think people in Philadelphia, whether they work for the district attorney's office or for the medical examiner, are they a little bit more nervous tonight?
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. I mean, there are things like, you know, that will come out. Like, I contacted an attorney from the attorney general's office, and I accused her of, you know, informing Philadelphia Homicide, okay, that if the state police ask for reports, don't give them any. Why? Why would they do that? Okay. She answers me in an email that I have a copy of, okay, saying, I didn't contact Homicide. I contacted the Philadelphia Law Department. Oh, why would you tell them not to give the state police any reports? And the state police were going to get interested in the case.
Here's where it gets interesting. Just one more aspect I want to get to. Again, this is Sam Goldberg. Earlier this week, being hounded by the Daily Mail, looking a little maniacal there, right here. And it's juxtapose this right here. Keep an eye on this and juxtapose it to this. Much different. I can't play it there where it automatically goes to, but you get the idea. This to this, looking a little different, like, time has been worse for the wear here for this guy, and maybe something is eating at him, and it seems like it is. But my friend Josh Shapiro, look, I don't hide about it. I'm proud. I'm a Jewish guy. Would I love to see a Jewish president? Yes. Is Governor Josh Shapiro going to run for president? Yes. Would I vote for this guy? 100% no. This is when Carm gets nervous. Says that there's going to be a hit put out against me. I don't care. he was the Pennsylvania Attorney General from 2017 to 2023. His office reviewed the Ellen Greenberg case for more than a year at the family's request, which is not true, according to Josh. Let's stop it right there. This is what, papers report. Well, what is the truth here? At your request, what happened?
He never called us, never spoke to us, never did anything for us at all. Zero, zip. I'd like to bring up a point on numbers. 172,000 people signed a website to open this and reopen the case. And the only ones that think this is suicide are the 20, 30 people in the office of the Pennsylvania Bureau of Justice or whatever. Nobody outside of the people who work in Philadelphia in the criminal justice system think this is a suicide. Nobody. You think I'd come across some people who may have different views on life and things, and maybe they don't think the way I do, but nobody has refuted our voyage here. We have never met or had any backlash from this voyage that this is not correct, that this is a suicide.
Tom Brennan doesn't hold back. Let me just ask it this way, Tom Brennan. Do you think that Josh Shapiro, the now governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, is he complicit in this, or has he just turned a blind eye to justice, in your opinion?
No, he's complicit.
You know, I have emailed him, probably at least a dozen times, asking for an hour of his time where I could sit down and, talk to him about this case, and I've never gotten a response. Never gotten a response from him.
I'm telling you, he's a
lawyer. I've emailed, put it on Facebook. I've done everything. Okay, to me, Governor Shapiro is a piece of shit. Okay, I'll be very honest with you. I think the man is a piece of shit. After 4.5 years, the only reason he came out with suicide was because of the pressure that, number one, Stephanie Farr put on his office, or he would have been sitting on the case until today. Okay? If it wouldn't have been for Stephanie Farr from the Inquirer calling his office saying, hey, let's talk about your report on this case. What have you done? Okay? All right? And I've talked to people in the Attorney General's office till this date. Is there a copy of their report in the system? There is not a copy of their report in the system. Where is the report of the work that they did, supposedly? Okay? Where is it? Okay? Where is it? Okay, Mr. Shapiro, tell me where it is. What did you read regarding this case? Who did you talk to regarding this case? Why did your people tell Stephanie Farr that they had another forensic analysis done on Ellen's computer and they found shadow searches, okay, regarding suicide? Where's the report? Oh, we had the FBI do it. You know, you contact the FBI. The FBI only did one. And they did that for the Philadelphia Police Department. And that one indicated nothing regarding suicide was found. So where did this all come from? Let's have some answers. Let's have some answers. I know where it came from. And I got the evidence. Okay. And guess what? You know who else is going to get that evidence? The individuals looking into this case. You know, I was involved with another governor in the state of Pennsylvania. Okay. When I sat down and advised him of his rights, he lost his memory. And for the last 2 years of his second term, it was done by his chief of, he was controlled, the state of Pennsylvania was controlled by his chief of staff. Okay. And that was Governor Shapp. Okay. I did an investigation on a Pennsylvania State Police commissioner who got fired for fixing tickets on DUIs for his friends. Okay. So, you know, I've done 7 political corruption cases. Okay. All involving where? Philadelphia. Okay. From Cianfrani to Fumo, you know, this is a way of life with the politics. It's a way of life with Philadelphia and the 5 surrounding counties.
That's what I say.
And it's a shame that the people, the good people in Philadelphia and the police officers who are out there laying their lives on the line every single day and night, okay, with the Philadelphia Police Department, why they have to be associated with this crap? Why do they? Why can't somebody change it? So maybe this could be the start of something that will, that can bring some changes about.
That is Tom Brennan. He is the family's private investigator. He's been working on this case for years. Kudos to him. And as you heard, he doesn't mince words. Guy D'Andrea, a former homicide prosecutor in the city of Philadelphia, which is a great city, but it is always shady in Philadelphia. Guy D'Andrea, your final thoughts here. I mean, is there a singular aspect of the investigation that, you know, bothers you the most? And just whatever you want to add here. Or lack of investigation.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's so difficult to answer because, again, you could start with day one, which the testing that should have been done on scene wasn't. And that was because of decisions that were made on the scene. Then you fast forward a couple of days to the ME's office meeting, like all these things I've said. So, you know, it's hard to pick that one singular thing. And the reason is because there were so many chances from 2011 to probably 2012, where if just a different decision, the right one was made, right? The right one based on policies, protocols, and procedures that were already in place, this may look very differently, right? And every mistake, you know, it's that spider sort of web effect, right? Like every mistake that was made then put other people and other departments in other positions to either cover up, make additional mistakes, you know, lose memory, make things up, like putting things in reports that don't belong because they didn't happen, right? Like, and this is just what happens. And so it would have taken one person to say, hang on, slow down, guys. This went off the rails repeatedly, and is there a way to get it back? And it just seems like no one in any of these offices at the end of the day, not no one, obviously there are people who were, but none of these offices at the end of the day in terms of top brass, or at least those making the decisions, ever wanted to get this back on track. And why, I don't know, but that's the question I hope the feds can answer.
Me too. I mean, Tom Brennan, you've been doing this long enough. Secrets always bubble up to the surface. During the course of what will be a federal investigation, by all accounts, will people start to turn on each other and will the truth come out, in your opinion?
I honestly believe that this is my own personal view of things. Do I think doctors will go to jail? No. Do I think doctors will tell the truth? Yes. Okay. Do I think attorneys will go to jail? No. Do I think attorneys will tell the truth? Yes. Okay. And that is the way these things go. Okay. It's not that they're dumping on anybody. Okay. It's just that they're finally realizing that, hey, I do not want to be in D block with Bubba, who says he's got a wedding ring for me. Okay. All right.
Not funny.
I don't want that. So I'm going to tell the truth.
Not funny.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to tell the truth. And Mr. Shapiro, okay, Mr. Shapiro, I personally believe the suicide decision made by the Attorney General's office was to solidify the Philadelphia vote for governor. Okay? That's why it was the way it was.
Just one thing. The people who did the investigation analysis in Philadelphia somehow were the same staff as the Attorney General, the Commonwealth.
Hired.
The Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And many of them now work for the governor.
That's called incest.
No, it's called
conflict of interest.
It's called corruption.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Tom.
You know, this is, you know, and I'm sorry, but this, if you take a very, very good look at our politics, all right, you're going to find, you would find so much. I mean, I've had days where I couldn't wait to get in the shower to take a shower. Okay. Because of the way I felt. All right. Because of the filth that I had to deal with. All right. So, you know, this is not a Philly thing. This is our society. And the sooner our society wakes up and decides, hey, we're no longer going to live like this, the better off we're going to be. But until that day, there are going to be people going to jail.
I have one more thing. It's a quick thing. Okay. I feel it's terrible that the governor's house suffered arson with the governor and his children in there. That was a terrible, terrible tragedy.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I agree 100%.
That should not happen to anyone.
Right.
No.
I think
thanks for pointing.
I want to press someplace in the media that I feel that way.
We'll get it out there on STS. One other question for Guy DeAndrea, just based on what Tom said, and then Josh and Sandy, I'll give you the final word. How soon, I mean, if subpoenas went out, I assume this is already in motion, Guy, but I mean, how soon is this all?
They went out.
They went out. You know that. Okay. Yeah. So
I know that for a fact.
Oh, wow. So they went out. So this is happening, everybody, because right now it's been reported as possibly happening. But you're hearing it right here. Everyone, please share the show. But Guy DeAndrea, it's interesting. You heard Tom Brennan say, you know, doctors are not going to go to jail. Lawyers are not going to go to jail, but they're going to speak. How much can you pressure a medical examiner or city attorney to offer up the truth or possibly face jail time? How strong can that insinuation be from investigators?
Pretty strong.
Well, it certainly depends upon what other information you have, right? And so, you know, if the FBI goes out, it's the idea in many ways of the prisoner dilemma, right? Meaning, as you know what the prisoner's dilemma is, right? So you have two people in two different rooms, both accused of the same crime or conspiracy to commit that crime. You tell prisoner A, prisoner B's over there singing like a canary. If you don't tell us, you're going to go to jail for life and he's going to walk scot-free or get some sweetheart deal. But if you, and it's then the process is he really talking in that room? Because if he isn't and I keep my mouth shut, we both go free. But if he is singing and I don't sing, I'm going to jail for life. But if we both sing, we'll get a deal, right? And so, you know, it's that dilemma in terms of what pressure's put on them. How much do they have? And if they have real leverage, yeah, people will start flipping pretty quick, I think. Now, if nobody flips, if there is corruption, again, this assumes that, this analysis at least, I hope this doesn't happen, but I'll tell you what, if I don't do criminal defense work, nor do I have any desire to, it's just not what I do. I represent victims and survivors. But if I'm a criminal defense attorney, I am advising every one of these individuals that when you walk in there, you take the Fifth Amendment to every single question that they ask you. And that in and of itself will be very telling, right? But you know, I don't know, quite frankly, I mean, the reason I hope they don't do that, even though it would be very telling, is I don't know how some of these people are going to answer very specific questions about things that just don't make sense. I don't know what the answer is going to be. I hope there's a good answer. And then everyone's been wrong about a lot of things for a long time. But they've chosen not to put that forth, which is always interesting and telling when people choose to do that or not do that. And so I just really don't know how someone's going to answer, in some ways, very simplistic and logical questions that just don't make sense. I really don't.
I can't emphasize it enough. This doesn't, nothing happens without you guys watching. Please share the episode or link to an article. Thomas Lake for CNN wrote a fantastic in-depth piece. You can Google that. I don't care what you're retweeting. Just tweet. Go on Instagram, go on Facebook. Josh gets the final word, and then his wife gets the final word, Sandy. So, Josh, whatever you want to leave us with, and then your wife.
I believe you that let justice come out. That's what our society, our democracy is about and based on. And if we don't have justice, what do we have?
Not a lot. It's the city a brotherly love, liberty. The Liberty Bell is there. Real quick programming note. Tomorrow, the Au Pair murder trial continues. Friday, we've got the arraignment of Michael, Dr. Michael McKee, accused of murdering his ex-wife and her husband, a dentist. The violence in this country never ceases to amaze me. Sandy, you on Surviving Survivor, you said you offered Sam Goldberg an invitation to come and help. Come help Sam Goldberg, but what else, Sandy? You get the final word.
I say amen to what Josh just said.
Love you, America. Sort of love you, Philadelphia, where it's always shady. The Commonwealth of PA, we got to love you. And justice here for Ellen.
Thank you.
Sam, if you know something, say something, Sam. You see those signs in the subway in New York. If you see something or know something, say something. Say something, Sam. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Guess stick around.